Hi, this is Lynn Fraser with the Killaby Center for Recovery and the Radical Recovery Summit, and I'm here today with Dr. Patricia Vickers. We talked to her during the last summit about Indigenous learning and trauma in residential schools, and we covered a lot of ground, and I wanted to catch up with you again, Patricia, to just get your perspective on what's happening right now with COVID-19, and I know that you have a new job in Haida Gwaii. And maybe you could just start by telling us what you're seeing right now and how is it for you?
Yes. First, I want to say that my great-grandfather is from here, Amos Collinson. And I'm learning some about some of my lineage, and it's great.
Yeah.
So I was here, I moved here February 17th, and I was 2 weeks on the job, and then the lockdown happened. Right. So, and Skidigit is as far as villages, Indigenous villages go on the coast, it's a fairly good size village. They're probably about between 800 to 1,200 living here.
Oh, that
and,
is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the closest one, the closest town is Queen Charlotte, and mm-hmm. it's about 8K. And then north of Skidigit is North Haida Gwaii is Masset and Masset Village. So I am working between two on a Healthy Haidas project, and Skidigit Health Center has hired me specifically for healing trauma and developing programs that will support healing trauma as well as sexual abuse. So 2 weeks on the job, and I'd only had a chance to meet elders, and because my great-grandfather's from here and I haven't grown up here or lived here, it's my first time. People are just getting to know me and me them. And I think for the first week, there was a whole lot of anxiety because there are people younger than myself and they've never experienced anything like it, nor have I.
Right.
And so the talk that was happening within the first 2 weeks of COVID was how we have this collective memory of the deaths that happened along the coast, where we lost, I think the Haidas lost 2/3. So that was before my great grandfather's time, the smallpox and flu that hit, influenza that hit so many others, and so there's that whole memory of infected blankets being spread, and so the intentional spreading of the disease. And then you have as well those who are older who were raised or half of their life or all of their life was in Indian residential school. Mm-hmm. So the combination of the two, I think, I wasn't sure what would come about, so we began to look at strategies and what can we do, because I did listen to some of your other speakers and what they were speaking to, and others are speaking to is isolation.
Right.
And so when you have the isolation and the alienation, and then you have a history of massive deaths because of disease, then it's that soil for fear and anxiety. And but what I've noticed, it's never reached panic. So what we did was we sent out newsletters, and there's the Emergency Operations Center, which is the Council of Haida Nation, Skidigit Band Council, and the Health Center. So the three of them have been working together.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really what I'm seeing is one of the major resources is there's this whole clan or tribal system. Mm-hmm. And so what has been done for feasts and for other ways of connecting, let's say, in the community through tribal and nation protocol and process, I was watching it in operation through the Emergency Operations Center. So, and then what I saw was that making sure elders had kits, and then the youth, the young woman who's head of the youth was sending out kits for youth, art kits and things that they could do. And it was all about ensuring that we had connection with the mm-hmm. people. And then a newsletter went out with different stories and information about trauma. Because I think with the isolation and the alienation, you get this freeze response. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting that the main focus was on connection and working with the reality of the physical isolation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And how what I've witnessed is that you have intergenerational complex trauma in many of the lives. And right. not just here, also Gitxatla, where my mother was adopted. And what I'm seeing is how incredibly powerful these cultural ways are as a resource, a healing resource, a mm-hmm. stabilizing resource, and a way that people regulate as the collective nervous system. Mm-hmm. So I've just been really, really appreciating it. For example, just today, I was messaged and said, there's smoked black cod, and sockeye and potatoes and prawns, come and get your lunch.
Nice.
yes. So, you know, the Haida are incredibly generous people as well. And that generosity goes a long way. I think in some ways it opens the door for gratitude to happen. And when you have gratitude, it's more than self-regulation, you know.
Right.
It just brings you to a really good place spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still the trauma issues, you know, but right. there's just, I'm seeing this incredible intergenerational ancestral resource. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to the intergenerational remembrance of the smallpox, which was a very deliberate disease to wipe out Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And that's in the bodies and in the traumatized system of people. Right. And then you also have this incredible resource that's also in the community and in the body.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. What I did for my doctoral dissertation is I interviewed three fluent speakers from Gitxatla, from what I call my home community, because that's where my mother was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And what I knew on some level, maybe genetically, was that the language just in and of itself is really something that has life.
Hmm.
So as I'm here and I've met with fluent speakers here, just the whole way of saying something. When I was talking to two of the women here about the work I'm doing, the healing work, and wanting to ground it in Haida language, one of the first things they said that we need to look at is to recognize where we are and to choose a different pathway. And another thing they said, but they said it in Haida, was and to hold the other's hand. And I thought, that's so beautiful, you know, how important it is to be with the other person. And so that we're invested, you know.
Right.
Not really in a professional way, or, you know, where we're getting paid to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're really seeing that caring in the community.
Yes. It's underneath everything. So there's still the trauma, mm-hmm. you know, there's still anguish. There are still these things and addictions in our communities. And at the same time, there's underneath it all, there's this deep beauty and strength.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and the land that you're on is such a source of that too. Such a yeah. different experience from being in a city, for instance, like you were saying.
It is because the fishermen are going out, and the health center pays for fish, and then they have freezers, and so they'll do something like what they just did, or they'll have food for elders, but their freezers are always full, you know, their storehouse is always full, and yeah. they're ready. Which is so, you know, which is a part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
To be ready.
Mm-hmm. So has there been COVID-19 in Haida Gwaii? Have there been any cases?
No.
Wonderful.
No. Yes. And that was the other thing that that I noticed right away, is the care that those in charge have for the elders and for the fluent speakers, knowing that they're a really big resource and they're working hard at passing the language on to the next generation. So they don't want anything to interfere with that. So right. Haida Gwaii is still closed to tourists. Doesn't matter what's happening everywhere else, you know,
right.
they're looking at what's happening globally and making their decisions from that.
Okay.
Yeah. So people will be traveling off island, I understand, and coming back. But at this point, it's still closed to tourism. I don't know if that's going to change in the next month or so. But
right.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly makes sense.
Yes.
To protect the community, and particularly to protect the elders.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really strong statement.
Yes, it is. And they were really strict about social distancing and staying in our own family bubble. And people were just really watching everything. And those who had to go off for medical and came back, they were in isolation for 2 weeks. And
right.
it's been good. But I think probably people are just so ready to go and visit relatives and, mm-hmm. you know, to travel off the island. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we don't have any active cases here where I am right now.
Hmm.
I've noticed I've seen my son and his family a few times in the last few weeks. And in my nervous system, they're not dangerous to me. So I have to really be using my conscious mind to remember that the virus isn't the same kind of danger and protection that we normally would be doing.
Right.
You know? Like, yes. Normally I would be more vigilant around different people or people who I feel like might be a threat to me, or, you know, if I'm out walking late at night, which I don't really do, but you know, those kinds of things feel like it's danger, so it's easier for us to take it seriously.
Yes.
But this doesn't feel like it, so it's quite different.
It is different. And and to hear people have taken it seriously because of our history, and there really hasn't been conspiracy talk or anything that is about a traumatized brain. Yeah, so because it's in our history and stories have been carried on, those historical stories of how hard it hit the people. It's not difficult to believe and accept that here's a threat again, here's another wave of this threat.
Right. And then more recently in the 80s and 90s, there was the AIDS epidemic.
Right.
Which also was a threat that spread through the community.
Yes. Yeah. Not the same as COVID, but yes.
No, spread in a different way. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yeah.
And also with a different kind of stigma and, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm.
So this is a very, very different experience, for instance, like what we're hearing in the Navajo Nation in the United States. It's devastating. And the diabetes and other factors that are making it more serious when someone gets it. So yes. That's really a very different environment that you're in there than what some people in the United States are in.
Yes. Yes. It helps being on an island, being isolated.
Right.
In a situation like this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even in North Canada, there's a lot more isolation, or it's easier.
Yes.
To isolate.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is. It is. Whereas the Navajo Nation is, times like these, exposed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or there's greater vulnerability. Maybe that's the right way to say it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the strong community work roots that you have are really a big factor in the safety of the people.
Yes.
Right.
And for me, it's encouraging to see, because I'm aware of the trauma and I'm aware of the anguish. Mm-hmm. But for myself, I've also been aware of the depth of the resource. It just goes so much deeper and so much farther back.
Right.
Say, my prayer is that, more of us would see that, more Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people as well. I think there's an awakening to that realization more and more, especially in the trauma field.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and there's such an awakening happening right now too around Black Lives Matter and systemic racism and all of the protests that have been happening. So it seems like everybody's really in a turmoil in some ways, but taking action in a way that we haven't really seen before either.
I don't think it's really come to Canada in as far as Indigenous, how we're still experiencing oppression, mm-hmm. and domination. So, for example, Senator Marie Sinclair was speaking out against or speaking to the fact that the federal government is actually going to withhold all of the statements of the victims, of the survivors of Indian Residential School, and where he stated that they, in the beginning, they assured that all of those statements would be made available.
Right.
I understand it has to do with confidentiality and consent, which is a legal issue it's really simple to, right? So yeah. Here we are on this, that you'll be making public, and all you needed from me was my consent to do this.
Right.
Well, and that's all that really needs to happen for these statements to be released. And we need to know as Indigenous people. Well, we want to know, let's say that.
Right.
Because we know how devastating it is. Our lives today show that. But, when I read that about Senator Sinclair's amazing work and how he's just dedicated and devoted to the work, My question was, well, where's the uprising in Canada?
Right.
Like, where is it? Nobody. There's nothing happening.
Yeah. Right.
And yet it's a continuation of hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for Indigenous people, we still have a long way to go in Canada before we see this kind of change.
Right. Yeah. And the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was a helpful step, but it certainly didn't go anywhere near as far as where we need to go to actually implement the recommendations. And
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yes. So true.
Yeah.
You know, in spite of all of this, there's still this beautiful lunch that's happened, and people are caring for elders, and feasts are still happening, names are still being passed on, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And you're part of that community.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gratefully.
Were the schools closed as well then during this time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the same here as everywhere else. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
And then that's it now until the fall, the schools
yes.
are. Yeah, right.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's interesting to just reflect on your experience in this small, on an island, in these small communities, but in the culture of connection and respect and real valuing. And everybody kind of pulling together on that. Are you noticing that there's more trauma responses, more mental health issues? I know a lot of people are talking about the effect of isolation and on people that are already maybe not that grounded or not that stable. What are you noticing there around that?
First Nations Health Authority was really on it. Regionally, they were offering weekly Zoom meetings for everyone who was on the front line, offering mm-hmm. services to the community, which is great. As I'm looking at moving forward, it's what can we do to help to heal from a history of trauma, you know, in individuals' lives. And so I'm looking at neurofeedback therapy specifically. And
mm-hmm.
yeah,
meditation. So is that something, meditation things, is that something that has started, or you just kind of got a hard stop, COVID hit, and then now you're?
Yes. Yeah. Back at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful to hear from you.
Yes.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed this.